My name's Randy Youngblood. I'm lead pastor. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad I can be with you. And welcome to the people who are watching online. This is also the service that we stream live, so there are people a lot of different places that are with us outside the room as well. Happy Father's Day. Oh, our theme for this year is relentless. It takes relentlessness, doesn't it, to be a good dad? I remember the joy of becoming a father. The stories that I hear are that when the first baby, mom makes the adjustments, but the second baby, that's when dad needs to learn to make the adjustments, or they're thrust upon him. I remember one time when our oldest was 8, the youngest was 2, and it was my turn to take them to swim practice. The oldest one was on the swim team, so it was my job to get them up to Barnesfield House and get her in the pool and keep the 2-year-old out of the pool because she just kept trying to run to the pool too. The thing that was different about that night was that I had a softball game, and this is when I learned where my priorities of my responsibilities as a dad were conflicting with my desires as a man. And I knew that I had just enough time to get them to practice, after practice, get them home, make it to my game, and I'd be there in time to warm up and play if everything went according to plan. And with 2 kids, ages 2 and 8, that's not always a given. But I thought it was. I could see how the plan should work. Well, we finished swim practice. I got them in the car, and I was feeling really good about myself until the oldest one said she forgot something. And I don't know what it was. I just know that if I could have left it there, I would have. So we had to go back, and I was upset. I was angry that I was going to be late, I was going to miss and maybe not get to play, but then I realized I needed to make a choice. And so for so many of us, you know, there are a lot of responsibilities and there are lots of joy, but really it comes down to whose legacy are you wanting to build? You want your legacy to be your activities and your enjoyment of the things that you do for a season, or do you want to build a legacy investing in others? So even though it was a hard moment, it was an easy choice. And it was at that point I realized that my activities needed to take a back seat to theirs. And when I get to talk to my daughters on Father's Day, I don't ever regret it for a moment. You know, the story I want to look at today is a man of pioneering faith. There is a relentlessness that he exhibited in pursuing God, even though he walked by faith. And walking by faith is a hard thing to do. Walking by faith means you don't always see where the next step is going to be or how many steps are going to be after that. Nobody finds it easy to walk by faith. It is the adventure of a lifetime. You know, people say today, a lot of guys say church is for women and kids. I'm grateful that that's not the case here. It certainly wasn't the case when Jesus started the church. He called real men and gave them real responsibility. And yet none of them knew what adventures awaited them or what to expect when he said, come, follow me. When Jesus says those words, come, follow me, or he says, I will send you, now go, those are opportunities that are exciting, and they're not for the wimpy or the faint of heart. In our series, Legacies of Faith, we've looked at many people that God has commended, not because of special abilities they had or special skills or gifts they possessed, but just simply because of how they trusted God. Now, some people will look at that and say, anybody can do that. That's no big deal. You're right, anybody can. But it takes guts and courage to walk it out. And that's why walking by faith in a spiritual journey is one of the most challenging, difficult, and rewarding opportunities that you have in a lifetime. When we look at pioneering faith, it requires 3 choices. The first choice is to trust God's promises no matter where they lead. Faith shows the reality of what we hope for. Now, that's not to be confused with wishful thinking. It's when God speaks, what God reveals creates hope, and our faith tells us that what he says is true. Faith is the evidence of things we can't see. That's why when God speaks, it's called revelation. Because he reveals things we don't otherwise have an opportunity to know. Jesus came from a place. that everyone will go, but no one who has gone there has been able to come back. He's the only one who has been able to step in our world and tell us of things that we can't see. It reminds me, once in a while I look at the obituaries to see if there's anybody that I know, and one person said that his obituary was written that he died and he was greeted in heaven by his wife, his dog, and his parakeet. I thought, oh, that's interesting. Wonder how people know so much about heaven. You know what? One thing is to make it up and think this is what I want. It's another thing to let God reveal it. And that's where faith is, where I put faith in God that what he has revealed is true. And the strength of my faith is the ability to make these three choices along that journey. So the first one is trust God's promises no matter where they lead. Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, it said he obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. How many of you, when you're asked to go someplace, you have questions before you go? Okay, how do I get there? What'll I do? What time? There are some people that just are really good at questions. They ask questions I would have never thought about. But I know the one thing that's universal, none of us like to appear like we don't know where we're going. It's kind of like I'm lost, but I'm making good time. I'm not going to let anyone know that where I'm driving, I have no idea where I'm going. Because we like to appear like we have it all together. And yet, the only way you and I are going to have a faith journey and appear to have it all together is to have confidence of the one who has called us. To the extent that we trust him is the extent that will be the extent of our confidence. Abraham obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. It unfolded this way. The Lord said to Abraham, "Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you." Sounds like a good deal. The things that I think stood out to this man was that he said, I will make you into a great nation. Now, what's a nation? It's a bunch of people. Now, to be told that when you have no children means what? Hey, we're going to have kids. And they weren't teenagers. It says that he was 75 years old. Abraham departed as the Lord instructed, and it said he was 75 years old. Now you think, everybody was old in the Old Testament. Not everybody. All those really, really old people who were hundreds of years old, that was before the flood. Something changed when the flood, when it rained for the first time. After the flood, people didn't live quite so long, and that's why it makes the point that Abram was 75 years old. He and his wife had no children, and God just said, if you will go, I will make you into a nation. So that's exciting. Oftentimes, when we hear a promise like that, we have an expectation according to time. Their clock was ticking. Abram was 75. We'll see later that Sarai was 10 years younger, so she was 65, and these were no spring chickens, but yet somehow they were still, believed they were still capable of having children. So if God's going to make a nation from us, we got to get started, and it's going to have to happen soon. So I think the clock was ticking, and the expectation was that God was going to deliver on that promise in a rapid sort of way. You ever obey God and expect immediate results? How about praying and expecting by the time it to be answered by the time you say amen? I have a hard time not being time bound by those kinds of things. I remember when this church started. When Kim and I came, the Lord gave us a vision that our church would reach a large number of people. Problem was, one Sunday there were only seven. Seven people. And yet, I believe that 1,000 or more were in our future. And so, when I started to see that, I started to think, okay, God's going to make things happen right away. A year, 10 at the most. 10 years in, it was nowhere on that path, and I looked ridiculous. And so it's real easy at those moments, isn't it, to think, okay, God made this promise, and so he just must not be able to fulfill it through me. And those are those struggles that we have when our faith is tested. It's real easy to have those time expectations, but time expectations are a two-edged sword that can cut both ways. So here they were. They headed out expecting immediate results, I'm sure. I don't know how long they traveled through the land before they started to hear the words, "Are we there yet? Are we there yet?" It was probably going in his own mind. So at that time, the Canaanites were in the land, and the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, I will give this land." So he built an altar there. See, a lot of times we think people in the Old Testament, God just created them as just faith giants. But we need to see Abram as a man just like us who's learning to walk by faith as he goes. In fact, you and I have a great advantage over these people. Because we look at people in the Old Testament, we sometimes think, didn't you get it? Why did you make the choices that you make? Or why were you so afraid? We can look at them both ways. But we have the advantage on this side of the cross, as Jesus said, that when we put our faith in him, he'll give us the Holy Spirit as a down payment guaranteeing our inheritance, who teaches us. So at one hand, let's not look at people as being these faith giants that it was easy. Understand that he was struggling to learn to walk by faith just like we do in this day and age. On the other hand, they've got it harder because they don't have the indwelling Holy Spirit. God is external at that time. So when he would encounter God, he would build an altar because that was a new thing and he wanted to remember. And God appeared to him and told him that this land would be his. So he traveled on a little further, and he built an altar there, and he called on the name of the Lord. You know, in the early days of your faith journey, worship is easy. And yet, as time goes on, two things happen. One is you realize life isn't as easy as you expected, and it can make you kind of cynical. On the other hand, you can lose your first love, and you can get distracted, and your heart can go astray. But at this stage, Abram was still learning to walk by faith, and it was new to him. But as he was traveling out, something unexpected happened. He was going from place to place to place over a period of time, and then a famine struck. There was a famine in the land. And I don't know what you would think, but if you were expecting God to give you a land that would be yours for you and your descendants, which meant you were going to get descendants and you were old and you expected all this to happen. I don't know how long you would expect to have to travel before something happened. Well, certainly not a famine. And the famine was severe, so they left that area altogether and went down into Egypt. Now what gives? That must have been hard. And when you and I face roadblocks, it's real easy to think, man, I must have missed it somewhere back there. Somewhere back there, I took a wrong turn, and I need to go back and find God. Now, not so fast. Don't be so hard on yourself. Because roadblocks, even though we've been conditioned to think, I must have done something wrong, God will allow trials, the New Testament says, to test our faith so that we can grow into maturity. When we look at God and say, God, will you just hurry up and give me my blessings? God is taking us on a journey of a lifetime to grow us into maturity. Expect bumps in the road that will challenge your faith. And when something happens, don't assume that you missed it or you've blown it or there's something wrong with you. Continue to look to God and continue to trust his promises no matter where they lead. And so down in Egypt, there was a real faith challenge. He knew God resided in this country, but he didn't know if God was still God over there. And in that day and age, gods that nations worshipped were very territorial. They were man-made, so they were made in the image of people, and they were territorial. He didn't understand that God's sovereignty went beyond borders of nations. And so he had some stumbles. He had some mistakes. And he learned that God was gracious, that he is sovereign everywhere that he would go. And so when he came back, He came back and he went to a place that he was familiar. He went back to the place where he had built his first altar. See, Abram struggles to trust God. He needed to hear from God again. And how do you seek reassurance? We tend to go to that which is familiar, where we know we've encountered God before. For me, the Global Leadership Summit of 2011 was one of those moments. It was the year that I turned 50, when I was in Bible college, they asked me when a pastor was in his prime, and I didn't know, so I guessed two random numbers, 35 and 55. And when I approached 35, I thought, I'm supposed to be in my prime. It also coincided about 10 years in, and the promises, the expectations that I had of God weren't being fulfilled. So I thought, I'm prime nothing, and that's part of what made it easy to quit. But when I came back, and now I was approaching the other end of that, and I was thinking, I've never had a prime. But it's going to be downhill, so I need to make plans to step aside. And it was at that Global Leadership Summit in 2011 that I felt the Lord impress upon me, Randy, you're not just a placeholder. I plan to use you. And so when they broke that clay and we're all given a piece at every host site, I wrote on there, you're not just a placeholder. And I held on to that. And I made plans for that the best would be yet to come, and that the years of my life that I thought would be over the hill would be God wanting to do something new in me that I hadn't expected. That was August. When do you expect it to start? Well, September would be soon enough. No, I'm just kidding. October, November came, and there was a crisis of faith because I looked in the mirror and under my tongue, I thought, oh, I bit my tongue. There's some infection there. So I nonchalantly went to my doctor for the follow-up on my physical. I said, oh, yeah, hey, doc, will you give me something for this infection? He said, that's not an infection. We've got to rule out cancer. And that's what it was. And so at those times when it looks like you're going to die, people say, well, go back to that which you, what was the last thing you know you heard from God? And I thought, that's a good question. I thought, the Global Leadership Summit in 2011, in August. And so it was, you're not just a placeholder, I plan to use you. Now, how'd you put those two together? I don't know. I didn't always get good help from other people. I remember we were at a Christmas Eve service with another family at another church, and by that point, word was getting out of my diagnosis. And they said, oh, we had a friend who had that kind of cancer. He died, but he glorified God, and I'm sure you will too. Gee, thanks. So how does God plan to use me? I didn't know, but I knew that this was up to him to decide. So Abraham, he had some faith struggles. He went back to what the last point was that he knew he'd encountered God. He had built an altar there, so he had something familiar to go back to because he needed the reassurance that he hadn't missed it, or that his stumbles hadn't disqualified him and canceled out God's promises. And the Lord met him there, and he said, look around. All the land that you see, I will give you and your offspring forever. Go walk the length and the breadth of it, for I am giving it to you. There was still life to be lived, and when you look at the map, you see this man went on quite a crazy journey. What started out with, hey, I want you to leave your family, your country, and your father's household and go to a place I'll show you, and I'm going to give you so many children, I'm going to create a nation from your offspring, and everyone's going to be blessed by them, and you're thinking, okay, this has to start soon. When is it going to start? So he went a lot of places, and he had a lot of challenges to continue to trust that God's promises were still valid. And that's why when choice, and when you're pioneering faith, it's going to be a challenge to trust God's promises no matter where they go. Because I promise you this, they will go places you didn't expect. Don't just follow your expectations, follow God's promises. Don't expect God to use the quickest and most direct route. Because God's not just about giving blessings, he's about growing people. And he's about growing people in the ways that it counts the most, abilities to trust him. He will take you on a journey of a lifetime, so keep walking. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, and he said, "Don't be afraid. I am your shield, and I am your great reward." Now, it's interesting to me because this is what God's speaking to me at this stage in my journey, that your reward, Randy, isn't the answered prayers. The reward isn't the ministry that I do through you. I am your reward. And so here I am, ambitious and driven and excited to do things for God and at the same time learning. That's why my word for the year, if you remember our first series of the year where we picked a word that would be the frame, that would be our theme for the year, mine is rest. And doesn't mean just kick back in a hammock. It means rest in God's promises, rest in the sufficiency of who he is and the joy of fellowship with him. What is your reward for your obedience? What do you expect? Often, we obey God for things and what he wants us to learn to see. And it's a learned appetite that he is our reward. So, he reminded him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of the Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land." And Abram struggled. He said, "How can I be sure? Why aren't we there yet?" Hear what he's saying. Because what we saw last week is that God was patient with Gideon. Why? Because God is patient with people who want to trust him. When you ask questions as an excuse to obey, you're going to get some opposition because pride says, "I know best." But when you're humble and you're wanting to obey, God is gracious and compassionate and will encourage us. He says, in effect, you're saying, "I know you're in control. I just don't understand why it's taking so long and what you're doing." Well, God revealed a little bit. The land is occupied by several nations, and he said, "The sins of the Amorites do not yet warrant their destruction." Remember, one of the things, there were people in the land so that the wild beast would not be so prevalent that when the people of Israel came in, they wouldn't be destroyed by the wild animals. So others were there, but others were there who would fall under God's judgment. And he said, it's just not time yet. So God wanted time to grow Abram's faith. God needed time for the land to be ready. You and I don't know everything that God is mindful of, but the Lord reaffirmed his covenant to give the land to Abram and his descendants, and which is quite a promise to a childless couple. So, a pioneering faith requires three choices. The first is to trust God no matter where his promises lead. The second is to trust God's promises no matter when they appear. He said, "I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted." Now, it took 25 years for that promise to be fulfilled. And keeping in mind that they expected it to start within a month. It was a hard journey. The path that they followed was a hard path. They lived in tents. They went places they didn't expect to have to go. They encountered famines and other things that they didn't expect to encounter. And God was still promising a promise that they hadn't seen hide nor hair of yet. And Abram said, "O sovereign Lord, what good are all your blessings if I have no one to leave them with? You've given me no descendants, and so one of my servants is going to be my heir." He said again, "I know you're in control. I just don't understand what you're doing. What good are all the blessings if I have no one to leave them with?" Isn't that a great question? I think it's the right perspective. If my life and my influence dies with me, what good was my life? We want something that will outlast us. Jesus said something similar when he said, "What good is it if you gain the whole world?" Now, theoretically, you can. You can live a life, you gain the whole world. And for many, that would be the ultimate. But what Jesus says, what good is that? And that's really what Abram was saying, too. What good is it if I have no one to leave it to? if I have no heir, no legacy? Well, the Lord said to him, you'll have a son. You will have a son of your own who will be your heir. And they took him outside, and he said, look up into the sky. What do you see? A lot of stars there. Count the stars. So I think Abraham started going, one, two. And then God said, no, Abraham, I'm just joking. You can't count the stars. That's the point. If you could count the stars, you could count your descendants. That's right there how many descendants you will have. Even though you can count them right now on a closed fist, I'm going to bless you in a way that they would be as countable as the number of stars over your head right now. Sometimes in our faith journeys, God gives us glimpses, but we don't recognize them because they just seem so impossible. But yet, God specializes in the impossible, and he's looking for people through whom he can do miracles. There's still going to be struggles. Abram and his wife Sarai struggled 10 years in. They said, man, we expected it to start in a month, and now 10 years, 120 months, and still nothing. And so they struggled, and they thought, God needs our help. But God didn't need their help. And every time they tried to help, they created problems, but they didn't negate God's promises. When Abram was 99, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty. Walk before me faithfully and be blameless, and then I will make my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. Abraham fell face down, and God said, As for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. And yet he had no children. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and he said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And God said, yes, Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him. My covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. And when God had finished speaking, he went up. You see, God knew when he first spoke to Abraham at the age of 75, he knew it would take 25 years, but he didn't tell him. Why? Because he wanted Abraham to learn to walk by faith and learn to trust him. God was allowing Abraham to learn to trust him by faith. And the same thing with you and me. God will give us glimpses of what he wants to do with our lives, but he doesn't give us a timetable. And when we set expectations to that, that becomes dangerous, because when God then violates our expectations that he didn't agree to, we conclude either God can't because he can't, or he can't through me. But either way, it causes us to stop trusting God's promises when they're still leading us, and to stop trusting God's promises when they're yet to appear. But Abraham believed God, and he believed God. It was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called God's friend. Now, the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised at the very time God had promised. He didn't meet their expectations, but he fulfilled his promises to the T. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him, and Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born. And so from this one man, Abraham, it says, and he was as good as dead, came descendants. You see, I don't blame them for expecting Isaac to come earlier. And I can think of a couple reasons. One is because they looked at their strength and they said, we're not going to have the strength for very many more years to do this. So if we're going to be able to do this, God's going to have to do it soon, which just means that we think God needs us to fulfill his promises. The other was, and this is more personal, I think they were just excited to have a baby. And they wanted him as soon as possible so they could enjoy him as many years as they had left on earth. And who can blame them for that? But here's what I think God is also looking for in the people that he wants to bless and utilize to produce great miracles. He needed somebody who was willing to recognize these competing interests. What were they? The competing interests of my enjoyment versus God's glory. He needed somebody, though they had interests and desire to enjoy this child, they were still more interested in God's glory. And in God's case, he wanted to produce a great miracle that would not have been so great if they were still capable of having children. You know what I mean? So he waited until their bodies were as good as dead, and then he produced offspring. They didn't have as many years to enjoy the baby, but man, what a legacy of faith and what a story to tell. And if you're more interested in having stories about God's greatness rather than your own, God is going to use you for some significant things, and he's going to give you stories that you and your descendants after you are going to enjoy telling. Are you willing? Are you willing to trust God long enough to give him the time to produce great miracles? If it has to be done in your strength, if it has to be done for your pleasure, it has to be done according to your timetables, the answer is no. But if you're willing to lay all that down and you're willing to trust God's promises no matter where they lead, if you and I are willing to trust God's promises no matter when they appear, the answer is yes. God was waiting to produce a great miracle. And the miracle he brought through Abraham and Sarah was as great as the miracle he produced, as miraculous as Gideon defeating those armies with 300 men and clay pots and jars. It was just as miraculous as God delivering Jericho to Joshua and a marching band. It was just as miraculous as God saving a prostitute and her family because of her faith. And it was just as miraculous as Abel, though he lived a short life, that his life spoke for thousands of years and still speaks of faith and generosity. What kind of miracle, what kind of legacy do you want to be a part of? Do you want it to be about your activities and your interests and your achievements? Or do you want it to be how God could do something great through someone like you and me? God chooses people who are more interested in waiting for his miracle than they are enjoying their pleasure. So a pioneering faith requires three choices: trusting God's promises no matter where they lead, trusting God's promises no matter when they appear, and the third one, trusting God's promises no matter how hard the obedience becomes. For Abraham, he probably thought the hard part was over and it was just enjoy the baby. Well, when the promise arrived, they enjoyed him for a few years, and then God said, ask Abraham to give him back. Ooh. And it happened like this. God tested Abraham. He said, Abraham. And you can hear, you can just imagine the spring and the excitement in his voice. Here I am. Life is good. Waited 25 years for this baby and for first sign that God's promises were going to be fulfilled, and life couldn't be any better. It was worth the wait. Well, for God, he said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah and sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. How hard would that be? So Abraham put the wood on Isaac's shoulders, and he carried the fire and the knife. What thoughts must be going through your mind? Even at that point, it would have been real easy to just put it down and say, no way. I trusted you for 25 years. I traveled the world over just for you to just lead me next door to this land. I waited and I trusted and I hoped and I dealt with disappointment. But this is just too much. And what kind of a God are you that would ask me to kill another human being and to kill my son? There's no way. Everyone has their limits and this is mine. You could understand if Abraham had said no, because every one of us has that point where the obedience is too hard. And that's also where God's miracle will die. Well, Abraham put the wood on Isaac's shoulders. He carried the fire and the knife, and they set off in the morning to go up to Mount Moriah. And the two of them probably were walking without saying a word, just like guys do, you know. They didn't have any sports teams to talk about in those days, and the weather was probably kind of boring, but at one point, Isaac broke the ice, and he said, Father, yes, my son, the wood and the fire are here, but where's the lamb? I think you forgot the lamb. I've just been trying to think about how to tell you that. what do you say when you're Abraham? He spoke words of faith, and he said, God will provide the lamb, my son. God will provide the lamb for the burnt offering. And so they traveled, and they came to the place that God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there, and he arranged the woods, looking around for that lamb, and the lamb hadn't showed up yet. And then there was only one thing left to do, and that's to take the rope and bind up his son and to lay his son on the altar. And I imagine him thinking, I didn't think it would come to this. I hoped it wouldn't come to this. But I must obey. And so he raised the knife, getting ready to plunge it into his son. And then an angel cried out, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham, yes, what do you want? It's about time you showed up. Don't harm the boy. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld from me your only son. And at that point, when Abraham looked up, he saw over in the thicket a ram caught by its horns. God had provided the lamb, but he had also required the obedience to be followed through with as well. So can you imagine the excitement of this father? And I don't know what Isaac thought of it as he was untied and they got the ram and they sacrificed it. And what a celebration of worship that must have been. I can't imagine as a father the joy and appreciation for a gracious God that would provide and not require that level of obedience, a level of obedience that Abraham was willing to carry out. He called that place, the Lord will provide. You see, pioneering faith will lead you to experiences with God that will produce passionate worship, because you'll see God come through in ways that only God could come through. If you and I say no, God doesn't show up. We reason that he must not mean what he says. So the answer is no, but it was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice. And Abraham, who had received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his son, even though God had told him, Isaac is the one through whom all your descendants will be counted. Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Abraham was willing to obey. He didn't understand it. He didn't want to, but he was going to obey at any cost. And you can see that a person, you can see why the scripture says that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. Why is that? It's because what we do reveals what we believe, and what we believe is always going to be lived out in what we do. Faith isn't talk. We don't talk faith. We live faith, and we live as though every promise God made is true, or we don't. But what we do or what we don't will reveal what we believe at any given moment. You see, for Abraham, his faith and his actions were working together. His faith was made complete by what he did, and he was considered righteous for what he did, because what he did, his obedience was prompted by faith. But Abraham reasoned. The New Testament so many times gives us insight into what people were thinking in the Old Testament, because only God knew. Abraham reasoned that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back. He reasoned that if he obeyed God, God would still fulfill his promises, even though he didn't see how. He just knew this was through whom he would do it. And in a sense, Abraham received his son back. Now, what would have happened if Abraham had said no? If he said no, enough is enough. God's promises would have still stood. God would have still fulfilled his promise. He would have still made Abraham a great nation through this boy. The nation of Israel would have still taken shape. The Messiah would have still come. But who would have suffered? Abraham and all of his descendants. Why? Because there would not have been that the Lord will provide moment. There would not have been the stories. There would not have been the legacy and the gratitude that carried him through the rest of his life for a good and loving and gracious God would have been replaced with guilt because he had said no. All the things that resulted from Abraham's willingness to obey benefited Abraham, even though he couldn't, wouldn't have blamed him if he would have just said no, because this just doesn't make sense to me. But what doesn't make sense is where faith begins. Faith is being certain of things that we can't see. There had been a different legacy, no pioneering faith. But the thing that Abraham saw, what he was looking forward to, and the further he traveled, the more he saw, and soon he got to the end of his life, and what he saw was that there was more beyond this life. And it said he was looking forward to a different city whose architect and builder is God. Pioneering faith keeps looking forward, and the further you see, the more God will reveal. And God was not ashamed to be called his God, for he has prepared that city for those who trust him. And what we see, what I see, what I saw this week with Abraham's story, is that God always delivers more than he promises to those who are willing to trust him. A pioneering faith requires three choices: a willingness, a choice to trust God no matter where his promises lead, a willingness to trust God's promises no matter when they appear, and a decision, a choice to trust God's promises no matter how hard obedience becomes. Where are you exercising faith right now? Where is it that you're taking next steps that you can't see? Where are you going that you don't know about? What are you withholding from God today that you need to place on that altar and be willing to say, yes, Lord, whatever it takes? Wherever you lead, whenever it will appear, and however hard it is, you are worth it, because I trust you that you keep your promises and you deliver more than you promise. Pioneer that kind of faith in your family and let God write that legacy with your life.